Now, when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, welcome everyone. This is Attorney Jason Robb. I am filling in for Eddie Miller this hour. We had a great show at 3 o'clock with Dr. Michael Hill and Paul Brown. So that was an excellent show. And then we have at 4 o'clock, we have Monica Schaefer and Gamar Rudolph. And then at 5 o'clock, we have Gene Andrews. So we have just a great lineup of guests this hour and then at 5 o'clock as well. So with me now, we have Monica Schaefer, and we are also trying to get Gamar Rudolph online. And so we're trying to get him on here. So Monica, say hello.
Yes. Hello, Jason Robb. Good to be on with you. And I'm sending out, you know, good wishes for Eddie to, you know, feel up to snuff. Hopefully he'll be doing fine and be back. But good of you to fill in for him. And I did hear the first hour. It was very, very good. So, all right.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's trying to learn the ropes. You know, I know, you know, people get on here and it seems like it's very easy. But I can attest that when you're the host for the 3 hours, it is a little challenging. And so I appreciate, Monica, for you putting up with me on this.
Oh, no, you're doing great. And of course, it's challenging if it's difficult to reach the guests, because then we have to, like Eddie loves the expression, fly by the seat of our pants. And we will do that, and it's not a problem. So, today, we were going to be talking to Gamar Rudolph, but I have a bit of knowledge about the topic, what he was going to be addressing. And I'll just go ahead with telling you a little bit about this. As you might recall, 4 days ago, so that would have been January 27th, every year since, I don't know how many years they've been doing this, they declared that to be the Holocaust Remembrance Day. And so some good people on our side of things, meaning people who look into it and, like, you know, prefer to the truth to all the lies and deceptions that have been you know, basically hardwired into our bloodstream and into our DNA since we were born, we're organizing a very academic summit called the Holocaust Summit. Now, in days gone by, in the 1980s and the 1990s, maybe the 1970s, I'm not sure, but there used to be actual conferences, like in real, like where people would meet, in physically meet. And these took place in America in various places. And I know that lots of good people met each other there, and it would have been a fantastic place to be. I wish I had been there. I never did attend one of those because I was still playing in the proverbial sandbox at that time. Not that I wasn't already what you call all grown up, but, you know, I was still asleep at the wheel, Jason. So
right.
I didn't really pay attention to those things. But anyway, sure. This was going to take place online on a platform called ftjmedia.com. Now, FTJ Media is no stranger to, you know, hard-hitting truth and being out there with you know, I guess you could say, oh, controversial information, you know, where actually we're lifting the veil, you know, for things. So right. They organized, this was going to take place there all day, Tuesday, January 27th, for the Holocaust Remembrance Day. They do say never forget. So, okay, we're going to contribute to this. And Germar Rudolf was one of the primary organizers of this. Did you want to say something before I continue?
No, I was continuing listening to you. Yeah, you're
okay.
You're
great.
Well.
I thought maybe you were interjecting there, but I just heard some noises. Maybe Germar was on the line already, but I think that's not the case. But I'm sure Liz will let us know when that happens. But anyway, so guess what happened? The platform went down. I think it was like just before this online conference was to begin. And this has not happened before to this platform. Now, I guess some threatening letters were sent from a French organization. I'm going to actually open this message here. LICRA, Ligue Internationale contre le Racisme et l'Antisémitisme, which is the International League Against Racism and Antisemitism. This is a French organization.
So
the day before, this organization, and you we all know that this is a Jewish organization, because they are right. always organizing to, you know, say anti-racism and anti-Semitism, which really is just code word for, you know, you are not allowed to notice. You're not allowed to notice and talk about what we Jews are doing. And yes, you're right, Jason. Anti-white is exactly right. That's a shorter way to say it. Anyway, they sent legal threats to companies involved in providing the software and hardware backbone for ftjmedia.com. That was the streaming platform slated to make the event happen. Now, just before 20 minutes, or sorry, just 20 minutes before 9 that morning, which is when it was supposed to start, 9 Eastern time, one of these companies caved in. The company hosting the servers on which FTJ Media was running. They simply flipped the switch and took all servers offline. So they basically caved to the threats. And, you know, when things are happening in real life, like in a conference center or a motel or whatever, what the Jews will do is they will wait until the day before or very shortly before the event is supposed to start. I'm sure you've experienced this, Jason, to sabotage it. They don't do it, you know, a month in advance or 2 weeks in advance. They'll do it the day before so that you have nowhere else to go or you just can't reorganize that quickly. So anyway, so that's what they did. And these guys, one of these companies caved. So FTJ Media now has, I'm just going to read this, finish reading this, and then I'm going to comment on this. FTJ Media now has a new secure hosting company, a new server, and everything is back up and running. We will not be silenced. Stronger and more determined than ever, we will try this as often as it takes until we get it done. Okay, now, here's my comment on this. So I do believe that this, and this would be Alfred, my brother, his voice is really in my head right now, too. This is how he would see it. He says, they want us to win because really, this is going to make us not just make it an annual event or just very occasional event. No, we're going to do this every month. Maybe we'll even do this every week. They are just going to, you know, they've drawn attention to the fact that they are terrified of people waking up to this lie. It proves, actually, they have proven it to us. They've proven it many times before, but this really also proved it again, that this is the linchpin lie upon which Jewish power resides. How else can you explain their terror, their fear that we might just be talking about these things. And, you know, the lineup of speakers were people who are very academically oriented. They're research oriented. They have looked into the story, and lo and behold, they have found some interesting facts. And yep, these facts, exactly. They're not allowed. You know, these are not allowed. I'll just pause for a moment, let you comment.
Well, because they're afraid of the average person listening to someone that has credibility, someone who maybe has investigated and researched and given a different opinion. They don't want that different opinion. They don't want that at all, because they know that once that happens, people are going to start questioning them. So we are going to take a short break, and we will come back and continue on with Monica Schaefer.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you right. Welcome back to Blood River Radio. This is your host, Jason Robb, and I have Monica Schaefer this hour, and she's been talking about some great things. Enlightening things, I guess I may should say, probably not great things, but enlightening things regarding cancellation of an event. And Monica, if you can continue on, because I'm really enjoying this this hour.
All right, Jason. So yeah, they had a lineup of speakers. Now, because of the change in schedule, now the fact that it was crashed, you know, the party was crashed. And now they have a new date, and that is February 7th. And actually, I'll just give out the website for listeners to have, and then you can go to that website. You can refresh it every day, get updates. And it's very, very simple. It's just called holocaustsummit.com. And that is going to give you all the updates of, first of all, where you can listen, when it's happening, and you know, February 7th is the scheduled date. The lineup of speakers is there. And yeah, that will give you really all the information of how you can find out how you can listen. And there's no charge. It's absolutely free. If you want, you can register so that you get email updates, but you don't have to. You can just mark your calendar for it and then go to to the website that day and listen in. And the start time is 9 in the morning Eastern time on
February 7th. I'm actually pulling that up. HolocaustSummit.com. And yes, absolutely right. And definitely I would advise every listener out there, they should be sharing this. Share it on your Facebook, X, all your social media sites. Share this event. I'm scrolling down, and they have a lot of great information. They have Kamar Rudolph, his picture, and the various other guests that will be talking about the Holocaust. That did not happen, and the myth behind
it.
And our you know, this, and like you were talking before the break, how the enemy, the Jewish enemy, hates any type of free flow of information. They do not want the average person to be able to read and listen to educators, people that have done research on this topic, and giving a different opinion. They only want one opinion. They don't want another opinion on this subject at all. And that's why they're so fearful about that. And obviously, you're very well, Monica. In Germany, they actually have a law that you can be criminalized and be put to prison for denying the Holocaust. And you're very well aware of that.
Yeah. What you just said about, you know, they really don't want us talking about this in a truthful way or with evidence, this kind of thing, and proven by the fact that it's not just Germany, but quite a few. I've lost count how many countries have laws on the books to forbid you from questioning their version of history. Now, just think about that for a moment. How much sense does it make to have a law which puts a piece of history into place? Something either happened or it didn't. How does it make sense? You could have all the laws in the world. You know, my brother calls them blots of toner on paper. Are those blots of toner on paper going to alter what happened in the past? Something either happened or it did not happen. This should be a matter for historians to figure out, support their findings with evidence. And when another thing I'll mention, that when you talk about opinions, that, you know, they don't want your opinions or my opinions or they have their opinions, I refer to this as I have reached different conclusions after looking into it more deeply than what they have been drip feeding us incessantly since the day we were born, with, you know, Hollywood movies, with what we learn in school, what the universities are teaching, with every possible medium that you can think of, other than, you know, well, when the internet came along, that was a game changer for sure. But long before the internet came, there were people who were studying this more closely. Many people, you know, but some people did some hard forensic research. They wrote books about it. They were criminalized for it. So some of these speakers that are in the lineup, they have been in jail. And when you mentioned Germany has these laws, well, I'll tell you, Canada does too now. Since June of 2022, it is forbidden to question this narrative about their, you know, the gas chambers and, you know, even the, well, the soap and the shrunken heads and the lampshades. I mean, these are lies that the Jewish historians or the Holocaust historians, those who call themselves Holocaust historians, the ones who are supporting the exterminationist theory, they have long admitted those aspects of the Holocaust to be nothing but lies. And, you know, normally, if you have a witness on the stand and they have been proven to be a liar about some things, they are credited, they are discounted as a reliable witness. Now, how is it that the Jews as a whole, as a group, because this is their, I would say, their religion, it is the Holocaustianity religion, this is their identity. So as a group, the Jews, they have been caught with many lies, many that they have admitted were lies, and they will just dismiss it then and say, oh, well, that was just a little bit of, you know, wartime, you know, these were exaggerations, or this was during the war and there's propaganda. But no. If you have been caught as a liar, then you should be dismissed as a credible witness. Now, for example, other lies, it's not just the soap and the shrunken heads and the lampshades, which are completely ridiculous stories that they traumatized the German people with, and they used at the, you know, the sham sort of vengeance trials after the war to basically the victors put the losers on trial and then hung a bunch of them and imprisoned a bunch more. But they were used as you know, trauma. But they also changed their story many times, Jason, about the Holocaust itself. Like, first of all, the Holocaust wasn't mentioned, that word wasn't used until sometime later. Like, if you check encyclopedias, physical encyclopedias from the 50s, you won't find the Holocaust in there, but you will, I'm not sure when it started, maybe sometime in the 60s, but then 1970, 78, I think it was, that Holocaust series came out on television, or a movie or a series, I don't really know. And that changed everything. And from then on, it just exploded with movies, and just this Holocaust narrative just exploded. And I mean, it's an industry. And so some people say, oh, it's all about the money. But I would say money is just one part of it. It's about control. It's about imposing guilt. It started with German guilt, and the Germans really do suffer under this guilt cult. But by extension, it has expanded to the entire white race. That's why it's relevant to all of us, because we are a very trusting people in general, and we also have high empathy. And so those qualities have been weaponized against us. So we're trusting. That means we easily believe lies. And then we have empathy, so we're easily made to feel guilty and feel bad. And we've been basically put into a suicidal mode. And yeah. I'll just pause and let you comment.
Well, you're absolutely right. They have used this Holocaust as a weaponization against our people, against our culture. They don't want our people to be proud of who they are, to be proud of being German or a French, Swede, or some other ethnic group. They, as a whole, they use that to basically to put down and shame our people for nothing else than saying, well, Holocaust was because Jews were massively killed by Germans, and as a white person, you represent, you're the representation of the Germans, and so you're a part of the Holocaust. They try to leap that quickly. And so when you have, like you said, even in Canada, laws that says you cannot even talk about that, then they know that if there was a public debate, a debate where you had witnesses, like you said, you had experts coming in an open debate, an open courtroom for everyone to listen and hear and put on the evidence, they would quickly realize that there was no such thing of the Holocaust. And they are fully aware of that. And that's why you have laws. Laws are in place to prevent people from doing something. I don't care if it's a speeding ticket. I don't care if it's because of a robbery. It's the same thing with the free speech. When they want to curtail the free speech, and they don't want you to talk about it. So we're going to end this. Getting ready to take a break. And then we are going to be having Monica Schaefer back on. And we're going to continue regarding the summit and the Holocaust.
You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Breaking news this hour from Town Hall. I'm Mary Rose. Multiple people are injured after a shooting during the Mardi Gras in the country parade in Clinton, Louisiana. Local media report at least three people were shot, with as many as six injured. The shooting happened near the East Feliciana Parish Courthouse. The harsh winter weather continues in the U.S.
A bomb cyclone in the south, a deep freeze in the eastern part of the U.S., and Florida just freezes. National Weather Service lead forecaster Bob Orovec says even Miami will be in the low to mid-30s Sunday morning.
Temperatures in Florida over the next few weeks are going to not be very Florida-like.
Meanwhile, that bomb cyclone bringing blizzard conditions to the Carolinas and parts of Georgia and Virginia.
Do you expect snowfall totals anywhere from 6 to 10 inches?
The rest of the U.S. experiencing extreme cold. Saturday morning, West Virginia, negative 27 degrees. I'm Julie Walker.
The Senate has voted to fund most of the government after President Trump and Democrats struck a deal on Homeland Security. White House correspondent Greg Cluxton reports.
Senators passed the measure a few hours before Friday's midnight deadline. To win passage of the bill, the president agreed to fund Homeland Security at current levels for 2 weeks, while lawmakers debate new restrictions on federal immigration raids demanded by Democrats. Because of the change in DHS funding, the bill heads back to the House, which is not due back until Monday. So technically, part of the government is shut down temporarily this weekend, but the impact should be minimal before the House vote. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Tens of thousands across the South are still without power nearly a week after storms, and frustration is boiling over. Nashville residents are criticizing their utilities response. More on these stories at townhall.com.
In today's fast-paced world, professionals face endless projects, deadlines, competition. To thrive, you need mental clarity, sharp focus, and reliable memory. That's why the same company that brings you Relief Factor created ThinkFactor. ThinkFactor is designed to help you think clearer and perform better daily. It's a powerful blend of nutrients that supercharges your memory and sharpens your focus. You can stay on top of your work and outshine the competition. After a couple of weeks of taking ThinkFactor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And you know what? But the longer you take ThinkFactor, the better the results are. If you've ever felt mentally foggy or struggled to keep up with everything on your plate, well, ThinkFactor can help you reclaim your cognitive edge and thrive in your life. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, to order ThinkFactor. Call 800-4-RELIEF or visit ReliefFactor.com. Your first bottle, just $19.95. ThinkFactor. Think clearer, perform better daily.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these this means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Welcome back to Blood River Radio. This is your host, Jason Robb, and we have Monica Schaefer on. We've been talking about the Holocaust myth, debunking the Holocaust, and all aspects about that. And at the last part before the break took place, I was talking about, you know, that the Jews, you know, in Canada or in Germany or various other parts in the Western world, they don't want anybody to be talking against or give any type of evidence regarding the so-called Holocaust. It did not happen. That's a myth. And we're talking about, you know, if you had an open courtroom and you had evidence to be presented as an attorney, you know, that's what we do all the time. You present evidence, you have expert witnesses, and it's open to the public so everyone can hear. And usually, if a person believes in something, they want to have that shown in public. They want the people to know about it. And for whatever reason, which we all know, they don't want that to be known. They don't want other people like Monica Schaefer and others to be talking about the myth of the Holocaust. And I was talking to Monica at the break that so often when I talk to people on the streets, or we talk about with people about the Holocaust, but they always love to bring that up about the Holocaust, you know, how horrible it is. And what I always do, I always try to direct it to something else. So I will always say, you're right, the Holocaust was a travesty. It's just a horrible situation of what happened over in Europe, where over 11 million Ukrainians, Russians were killed by the Jewish Bolshevik Revolution, how they were slaughtered. And the people reaction is like they've never heard of this. They don't know what's going on. What are you talking about? White Christians were slaughtered in the millions by the Bolshevik Revolution in the 1917s or before World War II. A massive amount of Christians, white Christians, were killed. That's never talked about in history. They don't want to talk about that. And all of a sudden, when you say that, they're almost like this, they're stopped in their tracks, because now they're not talking about the so-called Holocaust in Germany. Now we're talking about the Holocaust in some other country, a white genocide Holocaust. And all of a sudden, they don't know what to say about that. It kind of stops them in the tracks. So I always like to use that narrative as a talking point. And so I would encourage listeners out there, maybe do the same thing, try that out.
Isn't it interesting how the one so-called Holocaust that is criminalized to speak about is the one that actually they cannot prove? They do not have evidence for it. If they had the evidence to prove their story, they would simply show us the evidence, but they don't. So they not only criminalize you talking about it, but they criminalize you bringing evidence. And I want to talk about that some more, but before I do, these other genocides and you know, slaughters that you mentioned, and I think that's a brilliant strategy, Jason, is to steer the, say, yes, it's terrible, isn't it, what happened to, and then dot dot dot, the Armenians or the Ukrainians, or, and there's so many that you could bring up, and those are actually true genocides. They really did happen. And you mentioned that, well, most people don't know anything about them. Well, yeah, they just don't teach us about those things in school, you know, social studies class or geography class, whatever, or in the universities, or they don't make Hollywood movies about them. No, the one that didn't happen and that they criminalize and forbid you to speak about is the one they make ad nauseum movies and write, you know, the books that they write with all their stories, boo-hoo, and, you know, the survivors, and forever there's the survivors, and then there's intergenerational trauma, so the money still pours out to these intergenerational trauma survivors, because the actual so-called survivors, they're all dead and gone, or mostly, or they were babies and they might be in their old age now. So anyway, this, oh, they were babies, did you say? Did, oh yes, 3,000 babies were born in Auschwitz, did you know that? 3,000 babies. Oh, I thought it was a genocide factory. Why would they let there even be any babies being born when all they wanted to do was kill all the Jews? But anyway, back to this, yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? So you were talking about, yeah, we should have open debate. We should have, or just have all the evidence presented in a courtroom. In the 1980s, there was something remarkable that happened. And in Canada, there were these two great, they call them the Great Holocaust Trials. That was 1985 and 1988 in Toronto, Canada. And that was putting Ernst Zundel on trial for, you know, he republished a little booklet called Did 6 Million Really Die? He didn't write that book. He just republished it. And boy, oh boy, the you know, organized Jewry, the Jewish groups, boy, did they go after him. And he ended up in court. And in that, those trials, actual evidence was presented, and I do wish that I had read past the headlines at that time. I was in my 20s at that time, and so, you know, I could have read the articles that were printed in the mainstream newspapers, because remarkably they did print some of the proceedings, what was going on in the courts. Like, it was actually remarkable. But the headlines and how they presented it also on the radio news was basically that, oh, you know, Ernst Zundel, kind of a nutcase or a bad man, this kind of thing. And at that time, I guess I was interested in other things. And plus, I'd already been so indoctrinated that I just didn't really pay attention. I wish I had paid attention and really read the fine print. I would have learned interesting things, like for instance, some of the Jewish survivors were on the stand, and they gave some remarkable testimony. For example, that they could tell if a Polish Jew or a Hungarian Jew was being burned and put up, you know, smoked, came up as smoke through the chimney there, by the color of the smoke coming out, yeah, of the chimney. You can't make this stuff up. Well, yeah, apparently you can. They make it up. They, you know, this is so ridiculous. And besides which, it was actually found during those trials that no smoke comes out of the chimneys of the crematoria, and they proved that with, you know, technicians, witnesses who were technicians who said, no, the crematoria are designed in such a way that they do not emit smoke at all. So for these ridiculous testimonies to come out that, oh, you could tell these, you know, a fat Hungarian Jew as opposed to, you know, maybe a skinny Polish Jew or whatever by the smoke color. I mean, it was so ridiculous that their own people were cringing and said, whoa, you know, we better not say those kind of things again.
Right, exactly.
Can you imagine?
Those have been some Hollywood producers there too, no telling what to say.
Indeed. Indeed. I mean, they're that expression, you can't make this stuff up, but they do make this stuff up. So, but right, you know, getting back to this thing about evidence, I, in Germany, and that's where my experience lies, because as I probably most listeners to this program will know, that I was a political prisoner in Germany in 2018. I am a Canadian. I was visiting my brother Alfred, who is also a Canadian, but he reverse migrated. He went to Germany in the mid 80s and ended up staying there, getting married there. And yeah, that's where he lives. Anyway, I was visiting him. So that's where I made this video. And then a year and a half later, when I went back to visit him, I was arrested and put into jail, and then went through a big trial with Alfred also being on trial for the videos he was creating. So yeah, we were in well, he wasn't in jail until that trial started. But anyway, it turns out that you are not permitted to bring evidence into the court proceedings in Germany, evidence which would support your conclusions. Like, oh, this is how I reached my conclusions. I would like to show you the evidence that I have. This is how I came to the conclusion that the Holocaust did not happen, not the way they told us. You know, like right. what you made a good point, Jason. There was a lot of Holocaust going on, but it wasn't the Jews in gas chambers. And you could also say the Germans themselves were Holocausted. Somebody made a remarkable point the other day and said that every accusation is actually a confession. So that's a really good one, and I do hear the music.
Excellent point. We're going to come back after this last break.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Well, welcome back to Blood River Radio. This is Jason Robb, and I am host. And Monica Schaefer, we've been talking this hour with Monica Schaefer. And Monica, if you can continue on what you were talking about, the your path there in Germany, but currently what's happening.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to say that evidence is not permitted. And I do see the note that Germar is on the line. And so I'm going to hand it over to Germar. We had a great 45 minutes talking about, first of all, we talked about the summit, that it was canceled, and, well, not canceled. It was not canceled. It was attacked, the server. So I've explained all that, Germar, and then we just started talking about the fact that talking about the Holocaust is illegal in so many countries. And we've really been riffing on that whole theme. But here you are. So it's great that you did make it. So why don't I hand it over to you, Germar? Welcome. Germar is really the prime organizer of this Holocaust summit.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me. I'm sorry for being late, but something came in. Sometimes that's what life is about. Anyway, Yeah, what happened is that LICRA, which is the Ligue Internationale contre Racisme et Antisémitisme, is the French organization, International League Against Racism and Antisemitism.
Guillermo, I'll just tell you that I did explain all of that. In fact, I read the update that you had sent to us, and I explained all about LICRA and what they did. What you might want to focus on is some of the speakers that will be on February 7th, and maybe that would, sorry to interrupt you just when you were going to get going, but
fine.
Just because, yeah, I've covered that. I really did go into depth about how that happened, that the server was taken down, or that the server took down the platform. Go ahead.
Yes. I was, of course, not there, therefore I didn't know what was covered.
Yes, no problem. Yeah. So, but I think to talk about specifically some of the guests that are going to be talking, I think that would be of great interest to the listeners.
Yes. Well, apart from me, I'm doing the opening salvo with giving an overlook over our school of thought and the history and where we stand. It will be James Mosley, a Catholic priest from the UK, who has done quite some nice documentaries over the past several years. He will be presenting a paper on Treblinka and where we stand with that alleged extermination came. Peter Rushton, also from the UK, will be presenting a paper on the British intelligence services' interaction with Himmler toward the end of the war, showing no trace that they believed in the propaganda that they were officially spreading. And after a lunch break, we will have a three-person panel talking more about personal experiences. Nathaniel Kapner here in the U.S. will be talking about how he came about growing up in a Jewish family, not ever hearing much about the Holocaust in the 50s and 60s, and then it slowly taken over and him becoming a skeptic and throwing everything overboard and changing sides. And we have a bookstore owner who talks about censorship and pressure he has experienced when he wanted to sell books that were contesting the mainstream narrative. And we will have from the UK, Lady Michelle Renouf, who will be talking about the legal struggles in that country, focusing on one case that's a little dated, but very indicative of how battles in the courtroom can be won in a few countries, not in all, as you know full well, Germany has tightened up completely, submitting any evidence is illegal there, not just not permitted, it's a new crime.
Yes.
So. And then we have Vincent Renoir from France speaking about the political use and abuse of the Holocaust to not only stifle free speech, but to crush political dissent and political opposition. And we will have Heinz Bartisch and Andrew Allen, a duo, reporting about the U.S., how the Holocaust narrative is used in this country to target immigrants and to suppress free speech with extra legal and legal measures. And then we have Professor Skrbina, who is he's actually an emeritus, who will be discussing very early mainstream writings of revisionist nature, of skeptical nature on the Holocaust from the 1940s and 50s, showing that back in the days, even mainstream authors could still voice dissent without being completely destroyed, or rather their quote-unquote reputation being destroyed. And at the end, I have a mixed paper from Italian historian Carlo Martonio, the world's most knowledgeable, most prolific researcher and writer on the Holocaust issue. And we were presenting a paper of where we should go in the future, what's still to be done, and where we can go from here to conquer the white map spots on the maps that are still uncharted territory, but also to conquer the heads and minds and hearts of those who are yet unaware of the importance and the true nature of this entire battle. That will be pretty much it. We have tried to reach out for another scholar who is actually a mainstream historian and who has shown interest, but he is dragging his feet. So that's probably not going to happen.
Okay, so why don't you talk a little bit about your own situation? Some listeners might not be aware you yourself were in jail for quite some time. you were imprisoned because you made some discoveries as a PhD chemistry, you were a chemistry student, and then you did your PhD on what you found in Auschwitz. I mean, somehow this goes right back to actual forensically figuring this out, and then you reach some conclusions which were absolutely surprising to you, because you were a German young man who, of course, were indoctrinated with this story. Do you want to tell a little bit about that background, Germar? Go ahead.
Yes, well, it had nothing to do with my PhD thesis. My PhD thesis at the Max Planck Institute for Solid State Research in Stuttgart was focused on theoretical crystallography. It was an ivory tower project. It has nothing to do with history.
Okay.
I was doing that research parallel to my PhD thesis. You could say I was actually doing two PhD theses at the same time, an official one and the unofficial one. I was asked by law firms to verify the forensic studies that American expert for execution technologies at Leuchter had done in 1988. So 2-3 years later, there were a number of trials in Germany, as you know, questioning the mainstream narrative. It was illegal. Back then, you could still introduce evidence, or at least try to motion the court to have it admitted without running afoul of the law. That's no longer the case. But back then, some lawyer firms asked me to do follow-up research because there were a number of weak spots with Fred Leuchter's research. And I agreed because I found it a very interesting topic. I had been interested in history, not that topic in particular, because it's not a very pleasant one. World War II era history, yes, but it's kind of beating around the bush when it comes to Holocaust. But then this chemical issue came up. I was a chemist. I had graduated just in 1989, stumbled over that topic around that time. And I accepted the assignment given by Bayer Law Firm to reproduce and do some more research and back it up better to see what's going on at Auschwitz with the infamous Zyklon B pesticide, presumably used to kill up to 1 million Jews, whether or not it leaves any stains, any long-term stable residues in the masonry of the claimed locations. And that's what I did. Leuchter had already come to some conclusions in this regard, but they were not convincing to me for a number of reasons. And so I did the research and came up with conclusions that were similar, not necessarily identical, but similar to what Leuchter came to, meaning, well, all things considered, there should be a large amount of traces of so-called cyanides, iron cyanides, in the masonry. We can find them in a number of cases where this pesticide, Zyklon B, had been used for its intended purpose to kill vermin. And these locations show, in quite a number of cases, large residues of the cyanide compound. And under the circumstances of how the homicidal gassings at Auschwitz are supposed to have happened or could have happened, considering technical constraints, we should expect the same there, but we do not find them. Then come a number of other architectural documentary engineering conclusions supporting the finding. It cannot have happened. So that was my conclusion. And
right.
It was submitted to 7 or 8 criminal trials in Germany where defendants were in the dock for having contested the mainstream narrative. In each and every one of these cases, my evidence was not admitted. The court rejected everything. And at the end of this period of me appearing in court, they actually had an exemplary case where they prosecuted a lawyer for having filed a motion to introduce me as an expert witness.
Oh my goodness. This is, we're just coming to the end of this hour here, Germar, but this ties in perfectly with what we were talking about before you came on, is that evidence is not permitted, and they actually persecuted the lawyer for wanting to introduce the evidence. So people go to holocaustsummit.com. holocaustsummit.com, and you will find out what you need to know to listen to the summit on February 7th. Thank you, Germar, for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It brings up it was.